The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Amanda Cassidy is formerly of News Talk, spent a lot of time here in the salt mines doing news for News Talk. Previously, before that, was on Sky News, and then discovered that she had the capacity to write best-selling books, and it was a much easier gig than slogging away in broadcast. Amanda, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm laughing at the idea of Bobby in his fancy clothes, and I'm standing here in Achill Island wearing a woolly jumper and my Ugg boots.
Very nice. Well, the Bobby's outfit is remarkable. I will have to take a picture of him. I envy him hugely. What has you in Achill Island? Is this where home is now?
No, I'm Dublin through and through, but my daughter is then at Irish College, so we've come down the trek down to give her a hug for the middle weekend.
Oh, how nice. So she gets a bit of a break and to see the folks and then gets... Do you have to speak to her in Irish while you give her the hug?
I hope not. I really hope not. Unless I'm asking her how to go to the toilet. That's about the extent of my Irish.
I would have thought you were Irish. Cause didn't you do language? Didn't you do French and Italian when you were in college?
I studied Italian and French in college and went to Italy and France over the course of my studies. But just Irish I never connected with for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Well, this leads to the books, because one of the things that I was interested in is a lot of your books are set in various locations. I mean, we obviously have the Return set in Ireland, Perfect Place in London and in France, and Breaking set in Florida. I was reading that you keep travel logs, or had kept travel logs, of the places that you had visited. Did you do that with a view to writing about them, or just as a journal?
I think just as a journal. I've always written, even, you know, as a child, I wrote journals. And then as a teenager, I wrote really bad poetry. And then when I was doing a lot of traveling around Southeast Asia and various in Australia, I lived in Sydney for a year. I just always had a notebook on the go. And I think it's because not only do I have a terrible memory, but I think there's just something so lovely about revisiting those places. And I think through fiction writing, when I started writing fiction, I was really keen to bring in those places that I'd been over the years, not only to just feel like I could wrap myself in them again, but just because you can transport the reader as well while you're bringing them to those places that you've seen firsthand yourself.
Do you find yourself thinking, well, this is a clever tax write-off as well because I could go back and charge it as an expense?
I didn't actually until now, but thanks for that.
Glad I could help.
By that case, I'll set the next in the Maldives.
Well, I was going to say, well, you didn't do bad with the setting for A Perfect Place. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, the book itself is a psychological thriller, and it starts with influencer Elle Littlewood, and she wants more than anything else to increase her followers. So she decides to renovate a chateau in the south of France in order to boost her her followers, but also because her own personal past, she really wants a place to call home. But the problem is the castle, the beautiful castle in the south of France, it comes with its elderly, grumpy owner. And it's an actual real French property deal. It's called en viager, and it means to live. And what it really is you can get a property in the south of France for nearly half price, but it comes with its owner. So the longer they live, the more you will pay them month by month, and then you eventually get the property after they pass. So I just thought it was an amazing premise for a book about where somebody gets murdered at the start and you're not sure who or why, and you only find out on the last page.
Well, this is an interesting thing because I remember reading about this system a while ago, and I always thought that it was an intriguing one. Did you ever hear about the woman in Paris who was the oldest woman in the world at the point of her death, who was part of that scheme?
And she outlived it. Didn't she?
The guy downstairs.
The person who owned it.
Correct.
Yeah.
The guy downstairs did the deal when he was 50. He died of old age at 80, and she was still living on his dime.
That's
upstairs.
Right. And I just thought it would be so interesting to have this influencer in this castle, and she's doing it up, and her followers are loving it. But this grumpy old guy keeps getting in the way. And what if she just gave him a nudge when she's standing beside the pool one day or at the top of the stairs? Now, you don't even know until the last page if that is what happened, because you don't know even the victim at the start of the book. But I just thought it was so much fun to play around with this idea.
And how do these ideas, because, I mean, whether you take that or whether you take the potential abduction disappearance of a child in the other books, how do those ideas, do you sit fretting trying to find something, or is it that you wake in the middle of the night and go, aha, eureka?
A little bit of that you wake in the night, but I never had a problem generating ideas. In fact, sometimes you've too much and you're halfway through a book and you're like, have another shiny idea that suddenly you just want to turn all your attention to. But I think a lot of writers experience that. I think a lot of the ideas come from real life experiences that you do with a little twist. So in my first book, Breaking, I was petrified on holidays if my children, you know, something would happen to them really on my watch. And if we were sitting in a beach bar having a glass of wine, what if something happened to them? And then how would the media turn on me as somebody who was supposed to be being the most responsible person?
Can I just say, Amanda, I love the phraseology. I was petrified of something happening to my children, particularly on my watch.
Yeah, not on anyone else's. But there is that responsibility when you're a parent, and often, you know, I don't know, as a mother, I take that burden on myself a lot. And you just feel like, imagine something happened to them. So from my experience as a journalist, you know, I was in the media scrum. I was there with my microphone getting squished at it, probably asking very inappropriate questions to people who were going through a very difficult time. So I was able to channel that into the book. And so it was felt quite authentic. And then in my second book, The Returned, it opens with a house fire. And unfortunately, a few years ago, when my daughter was newborn, we had a house fire in our own house. So I think it's just channeling, just processing my own life experience through the prism of fiction. I think you can play around with it, and you can, I don't know, process it in a new type of way that I find quite cathartic, while also being creative, and hopefully while also entertaining readers.
Now, you talk about that thing of the life experience and the shift from journalism. Given that the Breaking was set in Florida, I'm reminded of Carl Hiaasen, who is, or was until recently, he retired out of the Miami Herald. But he was a Miami Herald crime journalist for a long number of years, then began to write fiction and wrote huge bestsellers, including Striptease, the Demi Moore, Burt Reynolds vehicle that became when it became a movie. He farmed all of the crime stories that he had seen in the Journal and reported on, or in the Herald rather, over that period, farmed them into his fiction. Do you do the same? Was the journalism useful in feeding into what you write?
I think you have to be very careful when you're talking about useful, and you're coming to real life stories and the potential that you could exploit somebody's real life tragedy. And I've always been very mindful of that. And I think that comes into my journalist training. So I think if you can represent, for example, in one of my books, there's domestic violence is represented. And I think as a journalist, I went and was able to research that and speak to people who'd gone through it. Not to say somebody who wasn't a journalist couldn't do that. But I think as long as you're representing the topics in a way that's very true and authentic to what you're writing about, I think a lot of writers do. And for example, you know, if I'm watching a true crime documentary, there'll be something in it and I'll think, oh my God, that actually could work really well in my book. So I think we're all a patchwork of our experiences and how we see the world. And I think as a writer, I'm no different. I'm channeling my life view into fiction. And so, yes, there will be parts of it that are incorporated from what I'll watch, what I've seen as a journalist. But hopefully I can do it in a really authentic way, because I have been outside those crime scenes and I have been, you know, speaking to victims of really difficult situations. And I think that empathy, I hope that empathy can go into my work while also maybe being useful to somebody along the way.
What about the absence of regular deadlines? Because when you were with Sky News or when you were with News Talk, there was the great advantage that somebody would say, look, can you go to X place and send us a package by the 1 o'clock news? And there's an immediacy to it. You have to have something ready. If you have to generate 100,000, 150, 200,000 words at some point in the next year, is that not a huge cultural shift?
It really was. And I used to say at the start, when I switched from fact to fiction, if you like, I found that one of the most difficult parts is that an editor would say, OK, well, if you have that back to us, those edits in 2 months' time, and I'd be thinking, oh my God, I'd be sitting there on the news with John Keogh, and he'd ask the head of the news, and he'd ask me to get something on air in 30 seconds. So it was a very different type of deadline. There are still deadlines, but yeah, I mean, I write about 1,000 or 2,000 words a day, which is the average length of an article that I might produce for a newspaper or a magazine. So I just try and break it down and figure, well, if you can write an article a day for 90 or 100 days, you've got a book. So I think you'll naturally, just like in any career, you break it down into small chunks. But it was definitely a shock to the system. And you do need somebody at some stage to kind of take it back off you and inject their input into it. But even that process is quite strange, because you're so used to just writing, sitting down and writing yourself. So to have the editor's feedback was also quite interesting and different. But also, I loved it, and I loved that collaboration.
Do you have to swallow hard? It has to be difficult. What's this, the Somerset Maugham line about murdering your darlings? When somebody comes back and says, this thing that you loved and handcrafted, they say, God, that's awful muck. Yank that bit out. Is that hard?
Well, I think, as a journalist, I think that was a little bit easier because I was so used to writing for a living. So if somebody said, oh, that's not, we don't want that chunk of in a paragraph, I think it's easier in a way for me because I had my training as a journalist that I could just say, okay, let's move on. You know, and get rid of that. So I wasn't too precious about my words, to be honest. But yeah, it's always difficult when you get those edits back.
Well, the end results have been very successful, and The Perfect Place seems to be, I don't want to jinx you, but seems to be selling like hotcakes. Is it true, by the way, that you're heading for Electric Picnic?
Yes, we've got some great news today. I'm just made the Irish Times best-selling list, which is amazing. And then on top of that, we're off to Electric Picnic tomorrow, straight up from Ackle. And we are appearing on the stage at Manifest at 3 o'clock. So alongside other crime writers, Sam Blake and Sinead Crowley. So it would be great if anyone's at EP to come along and to give us away from the crowd. Hopeful crowd.
I hope it goes well, and congratulations on making the bestseller list. That is Amanda Cassidy. Amanda, thank you so much. Amanda Cassidy's latest book, of course, just out. It is called A Perfect Place.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.